Virginia here. Glad you enjoy the work we do at Word of Mouth. We spend a lot of time filtering out a lot of bad ideas to make sure the stories we do are interesting. Your $5 or $10 donation allows us to spend the time to find the good ideas. The support link is at the top of the page at nhpr.org.
Word of Mouth.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. One thing common to superheroes, their names usually end with man.
Spider-Man.
Superman.
Batman. Like all the classics. Superman. You know what I'm saying? Batman's dope, man.
Can't stand
Batman.
Spider-Man. Superman.
Catwoman?
Mark Kent.
Is she a superhero?
I think so.
I think she, like, turns into a superhero.
Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman, yeah, for sure.
Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman has yet to be the subject of a major motion picture, until now, sort of. Wonder Women, the untold story of American superheroines, is a documentary that follows the character from her Amazonian origins to that campy TV show in the 70s to her following among punk rockers, suburban girls, and even Gloria Steinem. The documentary is screening tonight at Concord's Red River Theater. Christy Guevara Flanagan directed the film. Christy, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you.
I was pretty stunned to learn that Wonder Woman was actually the invention of a man, the psychologist William Moulton Marston. Can you tell us a little bit more about him? Quite a character.
He was quite a character, and that was really where my investigation began. I hadn't thought too much about Wonder Woman until I read an article mentioning Gail Simone, who was writing the comic at the time for DC. And in the article, it said that it was the first time it had ever been written by a woman. And so I went back and decided to find out who created her in the first place and why, and was surprised to find out that it was a man, and it was William Moulton Marston, who created her in 1941. So she's really been around for nearly as long as Superman and emerged from this golden age of comics. Now, at that time, a lot of the people creating comics were not familiar with the form because it was in its beginnings. It hadn't really been developed yet. So William Moulton Marston was actually a pop psychologist. He'd written some books. He was actually the inventor of the lie detector test and was really interested in ways to figure out if people were telling the truth or not, which comes into play in Wonder Woman.
The golden lasso.
With her lasso, right, which is her superpower. And the only superhero, as far as I know, where one of their powers is that they can make people tell the truth. And he had this very kind of radical, I think, for his time, idea that he wanted to create a superheroine that was going to be different from the other male heroes out there and wasn't just going to use her strength to solve crime and save the day and be the hero. She was going to use diplomacy. She was going to forgive people after they'd done wrong. And she was going to nurture as well.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how she changed over time. The first issue of the comic came out in December of 1941. So the U.S. engaged in World War II. She's fighting Nazis. But after the war, we have the kind of father knows best era of housewifery. So bring us through some of the ebbs and flows of Wonder Woman's personality and power.
Well, that was another thing that interested me in the characters. Here you have this long-lasting female heroine, but the way that she's been created and treated throughout the decades has been radically different. And I think it has a lot to do with how society has viewed women and women in leadership as heroes.
All over the United States, women are called upon to leave their homes and take jobs. They discover that factory work is usually no more difficult than housework.
So in the 40s, it was kind of a very important time for women. They were working outside of the home. They were called upon by the country to become factory workers and to step outside of the home when the men were at war. Then when the war is over, well, men need their jobs. Our economy is fueled by these guys being the primary breadwinners, especially at that time. So you see popular culture reflections of women then become that kind of Ozzie and Harriet or father knows best depictions where women are very much at home and cooking and cleaning and making dinner every night. And Wonder Woman was not different. So where she had been really powerful and going off and fighting the axis of evil, by the 50s, when you saw these other kind of female characters lose their strength in many ways, she was doing the same thing. Now, part of that might have had to do with the fact that her creator, William Moulton Marston, had passed, and she floundered for quite a bit. So she began to revolve around stories of romance, where she used to save her Steve Trevor, who was the main love interest in the series. She used to always save his butt, you know. Here he was all of a sudden carrying her and saving her. So the roles were completely reversed from the original intention.
One of the great peaks for Wonder Woman, however, came in the 1970s when she was played by Linda Carter. Now here is Linda Carter in a scene from your film, Wonder Women.
There was a comment made to me before I was cast. Well, if you get this, you know, you're going to have a lot of women hating you. And I went, huh? What? You know, that's not Wonder Woman. So I went about really deciding how I wanted her to be.
I'm not afraid of you. Do you understand that?
I've never wanted you to be afraid of me.
She would be interested in the community of women. Certainly not against men, but for the community of women. You know, I'm not a man.
Wonder Woman was played on television by Linda Carter, who appears in your film, and inspired other television shows where women were shown as powerful and strong, like The Bionic Woman. Here is Lindsay Wagner from your film, Wonder Women, The Untold Story of American Superheroines.
This character was going into a man's world, into a man's job, but I used to say I didn't want to be a man running around in a skirt.
Even my father, he cannot break six boards.
When the women entered their 20s and 30s, I started getting feedback. My dad wanted me to go to beauty school, but I work at NASA now. I'm an engineer at NASA, or I'm a whatever. Because your character showed me that I could be something far beyond whatever we ordinarily were on track to be.
A scene there from Wonder Women, The Untold Story of American Superheroines. We're speaking to the director of the film, Christy Guevara Flanagan. So I guess there was this point in the 1970s when we have a couple of at least good examples of strong and powerful women. But then we also have Charlie's Angels. So, you know, while these women are strong, they always seem to somehow make their way into bikinis. What's going on here?
Well, I think that's true, and I think that still holds true today, but definitely in the 70s, it was the first time these women were able to play these kind of action-packed heroes on TV. So they were first. They were breaking new ground. Of course, they still had to appeal to men as well, and I think the way that you do that is make them very foxy and sexy. So I think Charlie's Angels are kind of an extreme version of that, and almost, you know, for camp purposes, they were heroes, but they were always found in these ridiculous situations where they had to wear a bikini or they happened to be, you know, in a towel in the gym locker and they were, you know, solving the crime that way.
Once upon a time, there were three little girls who went to the police academy.
At the time, in the 70s, it was still pretty revolutionary, you know, to have three women starring in a TV show. And in Charlie's Angels, you know, their boss was a disembodied voice.
He was just on a speakerphone.
So he really didn't exist.
And now they work for me. My name is Charlie.
So that's what was revolutionary about it. It wasn't necessarily the way they dressed, but it was the way they acted. And you had to kind of take both at the same time, because that's all that there was out there, and that was cutting edge. What to me is sad is that we still are kind of having those same battles today. You still have our female superheroes wearing very little clothing or, you know, just really kind of dolled up for their roles, kicking butt, but at the same time looking, you know, like a Budweiser ad. Mm-hmm. So I would like to have hoped that we could have come a little bit farther in those 40 years since those shows have come out.
I'm going to say even more so, this kind of idealized body. I mean, I think a lot of the female characters from video games, for one thing, you know, a lot of sort of internet culture is these sort of hyper female bodies. And I guess there's always the argument that men's bodies are also hyper masculinized in comics.
Well, I think that both body types are ideal. Definitely in comics, you have the male ideal of what's supposed to be the strong man. But ultimately, they are treated differently if you really analyze it. I mean, the women, their sexuality is usually part of the plot, you know. So who they love and how they love and why they're, you know, why violence is enacted upon them is usually because of their sexuality, where it's different for men. It's not quite the same. And ultimately, the men are the ones that usually save the day. And a lot of times, these strong female characters are dead by the end of the story. They're sacrificed or they kill themselves. It's almost like the message is that they can't control the power that they do have. They just can't exist in the reality of this universe. So they have to give up everything, which is their life.
I'd love to go back to this sort of timeline of evolving images. We do see during the 1980s, let's say the Reagan years, that's the parallel I think you draw in the film, that women sort of revert. And then at the end of the 80s, you have a little bit of an upswing. You have Ripley in Aliens. You have Sarah Connor in The Terminator, G.I. Jane, and finally Thelma and Louise. I mean, some hardcore women. But you also have in the 1990s the sort of beginning of this Riot Girl movement, led largely by Kathleen Hanna. That was the name of her zine, Riot Girl. She was also from the band Bikini Kill. She is also in your film, talking about the images of women and this idea of girl power.
There's like so few images of powerful women that women get desperate and they're like, okay, that's powerful. And we'll just take any kind of garbage or crumb off the table that we can find and claim that as something that's powerful, even when it's kind of not. We wrote a fanzine in 1991 called Bikini Kill 2 Girl Power. It said girl power on the cover. It was the first time anybody supposedly had ever said that. And then 3 years later, Spice Girls.
This is about girl power, so come on!
And they were like, girl power, wear high heels, girl power. And it was like, it just became a part of the wallpaper. Every time I see it, I just kind of cringe.
That's Kathleen Hanna, formerly of the band Bikini Kill. She's founder of Riot Girl, the zine. And that's a scene from Wonder Woman, the untold story of American superheroines. We're speaking with the director, Christy Guevara Flanagan. Christy, tell me a little bit about that. I really feel like one of the most moving things about this film for me was seeing young girls on the street being asked about, you know, who would they be as a superpower or who do they look to? Or young girls dressed up at Comic-Con as Wonder Woman looking for some sort of heroine to emulate or making films, you know, girls making films about girls. What are they looking at? What are the models for them now?
Well, I think everybody needs role models, you know, women and men, boys and girls, people of different ethnicities, and they need those role models to look like they look. So they need to see strength and resiliency and power reflected in the kinds of images that on TV, the kind of stories they read. And that's really my driving force for making this film, is that, you know, women and girls need these action figures that they can look up to as role models. So you can have, you know, a lawyer and a doctor be role models, but you also need characters that kind of have that physical strength to really battle the villains, especially important for young people, for girls and boys. And there's not a lot of options out there still to this day for girls. And you look at it from animated cartoons to superhero comics to the action blockbusters of the day. There's few women and few girls that are taking the roles of heroes. You know, part of what we have to do is make our own. And I think part of the reason you don't see a lot of heroes that represent women is because a lot of the studio execs, the people in real leadership positions, aren't women. So I think once women start taking on positions of power in the media, that is, you know, directing, writing, and producing, executive producing, you'll see more diversity in terms of gender representation. And part of the way to get there is to teach young girls the tools of the trade, you know, how to actually use a camera, how to run a business, how to get people interested in being in your films and creating a community. And that's one of the reasons I look to the Riot Girl movement because it was a DIY movement, that is a do-it-yourself movement. There weren't images that reflected themselves on TV, there were very few, and so they decided to make their own media. They made their own zines, they made their own videos, they made their own bands, and this became known as the Riot Girl movement, and it was aggressive.
Well, there are rumors of Joss Whedon, the creator of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, making a Wonder Woman film starring Megan Fox, possibly. Do you have high hopes for a film like that?
Well, there's been lots of attempts at making a Wonder Woman action film, and it's just so surprising that it hasn't happened. I mean, how many different versions
right.
of
how
Superman
many Justice League stars
Batman,
have come right
I know have there been and there's this idea, well, one, you know, we got to get it right. There's too many different versions of Wonder Woman out there. But, you know, I mean, they're not afraid to fail with Superman or Batman because the merchandise, the copyright, the figure is so strong and well-known. It can suffer, you know, different versions of it on screen. And the other idea is that women don't do well starring in films when it comes to action blockbusters, which I just, you know, you look at the Hunger Games, you look at Twilight, and that's just not true. You know, there just hasn't been material that women have wanted to see. And so if you make the film, they will come. Hmm. And I think Wonder Woman would be a great place to start.
Christy Guevara Flanagan, director of Wonder Women, the untold story of American superheroines. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
The movie will be showing at the Red River tonight, followed by a panel moderated by Word of Mouth's own Wonder Woman, Rebecca Lavoie. The film will be making its broadcast premiere on PBS's Independent Lens. You can check our website for local listings. And Christy, just one more question for you. If you had a superpower, what would it be?
If I had a superpower, I would like to have the power to heal people from whatever kind of physical or emotional wounds they may have. But I'd like to do it in a way where it would leave some kind of a mark so that other people could see that there's people out there that have been healed as well.
After speaking with Christy, we asked some of the women here at NHPR what their preferred superpower would be.
Let's see, I've already got super hearing, so I don't need that. I want to be able to jump tall buildings in a single bound.
The mega brain, self-styling hair.
Invisibility. Do you want me to explain why? I think if I could go around with no one seeing me, I would know all the secrets, and I like knowing secrets.
To be able to fly. It's just so free, and I dream it a lot, but I really would like to do it.
My superpower would be having perfect memory, being able to remember everything except when I didn't want to, and then I could voluntarily unremember something.
Making sure no kid goes hungry. I think that an advocate of food for all and getting good, accessible local food for those who are in need, especially.
Whatever your gender, you can share your wished-for superpower on our Facebook page, Word of Mouth Radio. And we thank you for joining us on our mission for world domination of sorts. I'm Virginia Prescott. From all of us here at Word of Mouth, thank you for your listening time and, as always, your support for New Hampshire Public Radio.